Again, my name is Jackie and I am an addict.
Amen.
All right. And I would like to welcome you to the workshop, Living the Program. And right now, I will give you our first speaker, and that it will be Linda.
Hi, Ruth. My name is Linda, and I'm a recovering addict. Shall I say a grateful recovering addict by right now. And I'm real crazy today. I mean, I am real crazy today. And I didn't expect this microphone to be up in my face. But one of the reasons why I'm real crazy and one of the reasons why I'm doing this workshop is I need to share. I really need to share. Not just on Living the Program, because that's exactly what I've been doing this last year. I decided to do some other service work about 2 years ago. I decided I was tired of the chaos on the meeting level, and then I went to the area level as far as the GSR was concerned, and then I went further up to get above to the convention level. 3 years in the program, trying to do things real fast, just like I did when I was using, right? Because when I first came in here, that's what I did. I had to get right into the service work after my, 10th or 11th month. I was really kind of scared because I didn't really think that y'all would like me. You know, I had a lot of problems when I came in here, and I still got a lot of problems, and I got a lot of work to do. I just kind of hung around my first year because I just didn't think I was as bad as other folks. I just wanted 6 months. Then I can go back and do it a different kind of way. But I was real miserable when I got here because I knew my life was unmanageable. I didn't know anything about any steps, but I knew when I looked in that first step and it said the part about your life being unmanageable fit me. I knew I couldn't get started. I knew every time I got started I couldn't stop. But I didn't relate how bad my life was. And my life was really, really bad. So when I came into recovery, I heard three things that I always like to share about. The first thing was that I had to make this a priority, and that's the way the man did his hands, and I was like, yeah, you know, I got to do this thing right. And then, you know how we are when we're addicts. We ain't the most honest people in the world. And they told me I had to be honest. Sheesh. So used to telling lies, I almost forgot how it was to be honest. And then I went to this meeting, and they told me that I couldn't juggle the fear and faith, that I had to do it one way or the other. I had to leave Satan alone, stop straddling that fence, and have some faith. Prior to coming in here, I had tried to stop so many times, and I'd always get like 21 days, and I said, shoot, man, if I can get off crack for 21 days, I ain't no real addict. I couldn't get past 21 days, and y'all know I was the happiest person in the world when I picked up that 3-month chip. 6-month chip, 9-month chip. And when I got the 9-month chip, I'm like, shoot, you know, I can have an anniversary now. I like all that attention they get. But, you know, I'm a real shy person, and I don't really like the attention. I like the behind-the-scenes thing, and I don't really like to share, you know what I'm saying? But I've gotten better with that over the last 4 years that I've been in here because, you know, it's just not me, you know, being up in the forefront. But it's just something about me that always ends up there, and I'm like, well, this is where God wants me to be. And now I'm practicing some of the principles and steps, you know, working on his will today. But when I first got in here, like I said, and I got that first year, I still wasn't sure I was going to stay around. But several people came up to me, because I thought if I could do it a year, you know, some kind of way, I could go back and do some other things. I'm not going to give up. And see, when I first came in here, y'all told me that I could not do these things for the rest of my life. And I thought, how do these people have fun without drugs? You know what I'm saying? How in the world do they have fun? You know, they must be crazy. I can't do this for the rest of my life. But then the concept of one day at a time stepped in, and I said, okay, you know, I'm going to practice that. And I got there 365 days, one day at a time. And then God intervened again. And I had, I guess, about 4 people come up to me at my anniversary and said, now you got to do some work. You know, at first I caught some feelings like, darn, can I just enjoy a few minutes? You know, it's my anniversary. I've been looking for this, all this attention I'm getting. They're going to come up to me and tell me I got to do some work. So I said, okay. My sponsor told me she just wanted me to stay clean. I tried to work a first step in 10 months, and she sent me back. Caught some feelings about that. Well, I ain't going to do no steps if I can't do it right. And so it took me 18 months, and I finally got that first step, but I know why God had me look at that first step until 18 months. And then I was pretty good with the second one. I went on with the second one, the third one, and I dragged into that fourth step into that third year, because I just didn't want to open up all them old wounds, you know. But it was good because, you know, I look back on it, and what I'm trying to say is the steps are the program. That's what y'all told me when I got here. And it wasn't. I did not start really, really growing into this program. I could not have gone through what I went through in the last year, losing two jobs, being a single parent, and stuck with this committee in the last year if I had not worked my fourth step last year. And it was after leaving this convention that I worked that fourth step. But you know, I opened a lot of old wounds, a lot of sexual abuse and things like that. And it was good though, because one of the things I let go of, I hated the second grade teacher. And I'm 41 years old in 2 weeks. I'm holding on to something. I'll never forget. It wasn't until January 1st last year, after I did my fourth step, that I let go of that resentment I had for that second grade teacher. I was doing this little play, and I'll never forget the way she hollered at me. But you know, 6 years old, and I was a talker, as y'all can see. I can talk when I want to talk. I'll never forget the way she talked to me and the things she said. And she's one of my aunt's best friends. I grew up in this small town, but it wasn't until last year that after I did that fourth step and I saw her, I had let go of that resentment. I hated that woman. I don't care what we saw, where we saw her, when we saw her, I'd always look, I couldn't stand Miss Johnson. I couldn't stand Miss Johnson since second grade. And like I said, I was 40 years old last year. I just didn't like that woman. And now, and even today, you know, I let go of that BOD. It was the program committee, the BOD, the new crew came in, and they had all this, we're going to do things this way, and it was too much. And, you know, my sponsor tells me I still need to work on that. I don't like that chaos. I just, you know, because I'll feed into it, and then you start arguing, and I'm starting arguing, and we both screaming and hollering at each other, and I'm just not the type of person, once I get riled up, that I can pull myself back and back off of. Once I'm in a fight, I'm in the fight for real to the end. You know, because I grew up in the projects, and when you, you know, went into a fight, if you didn't fight, then you were a chump, or you were a punk, and this, that, and the other. So that's how I grew up, you know. So I brought all that crap into recovery with me. And now I'm learning how to let go. And y'all told me the way to let go is to practice the principles of the program. And I'm gonna tell you this, if you're thinking about some service work, you better be working on some steps. If you think about working with the convention next year, you better be doing a whole lot of practice. Because I'm going to tell you, you'll need the steps. And you know, when I was telling my friend that I was going to share today, he was like, you don't need to be sharing. This is about your ego and this and that and the other. Ego? I need to share. I have not been going to meetings on a consistent basis. I have not been doing my other service work on a consistent basis. You know, because when I took this thing too seriously, and that's another thing about me, when I take on a position or job or anything, I just go to the extreme. You know, I'm learning in recovery how to find that balance. I'm either this way, nice, 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 or I'm either this way, not so nice. You know, I'm not the type of person that can find that balance, and in the 4 years I've been here, I'm learning how to find that balance. I'm learning how to go somewhere, and when somebody says something I don't like, to say, is this a battle I need to pick and fight today, or should I back off? You know, because I remember my mother and my sister telling me a long time ago, you got to pick your battles. Every battle ain't meant to be fought. So that's one of the things I'm learning with this program, is to learn how to find that balance and when to pick that battle, when to really, really stand up for what I should stand up and when to back off and say, this is not worth it. But you know, I'm also suffering from some other things, some physical things. As I said, you know, I'll be 41 in 2 weeks, and my body has definitely changed. Forgive me, men, but the PMS seems to last a lot longer than it used to. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, you just be crazy all the time, and that's the way I feel. And my doctor's like, okay, we're going to run some tests. I just keep running to her and say, you sure something ain't really wrong with me? And she keeps saying, no, there's nothing wrong with you. So now my girlfriend, who's got about 10 years, keeps telling me, Linda, you got to find the boundaries. She read this book about boundaries. So now she's helping me find my boundaries whenever I go through something, you know. And I'm like, okay. But the good thing about being in recovery today is I'm very willing. And I have an open mind. And I wasn't very willing and open-minded when I got here. You know what I'm saying? I just was tired of living in that prison. Just tired of using. And fortunately for me, like I said, I was a single parent, and I'm glad I did get here what I did, because my son was in the sixth grade, and, you know, his life is miserable, too. And I heard so many women share about how their sons came into the room behind them when they're doing things, and now they feel responsible for it. And, you know, I have a very, very well-mannered son, I guess you could say. Like I said, these last 4 years, I kind of turned things around. Because he could be out there doing a lot worse than getting D's and F's. And I have to wrestle with that too and pray on that one day at a time. But, you know, like I said, I'm not going to, I need to share, but I'm not going to share a long time. You know, I just wanted to come up here and tell you that the last year of my life, I really learned how to live the program. You know, I stayed here, like I said, the first year I faked it, the second year I don't know what the heck I was doing. And it wasn't until that third year that I lost my job twice that I learned how to sit still and let God work in my life, work the steps. And, you know, there were some times when I wanted to give up. There were some times when I said, I'm just going to sit at home and get some food stamps. I'm not going back out there and deal with that crazy crap because, you know, I'm a computer programmer and it's real stressful. You know, and you know, I work with the good old boy network, man, and oh, sometimes you go in there and they like to play those games and it's real political and, you know, I'm somebody saying I can't do that today if I'm trying to work on a spiritual program, but at the same time, you know, sometimes you have to take them steps and put them aside and pick them battles and not be so nice well, some days, you know, in order to get things done. Like I said, you know, I did my fourth step and fifth step, and I've really been procrastinating on the sixth and seventh, and my sponsor told me when I was off for 3 weeks, you know, pick that book up and get back into that step, and I did. Did that, and I got back into a step meeting. I was not going to meetings last year. I was just doing my program work, and that was it. I had to stop going to meetings. I run up to this Serenity Club where I live for like 15 minutes, and the stuff hit the fan, and I was very miserable. Work-wise, I got laid off. I was about to get laid off, and I picked this job. And once again, my MO when I first came in here was to run. Whenever I didn't like something, I just picked up to run, especially when it came to a job. And I spent 4 months, and that man had, it was the worst job of my life, and I was really miserable. And I ran into another one, was a temp to perm, but after that, I had to get my head together. And after 3 months, I got laid off there, and I thought, that's it. I said, I'm going to sit still, and I'm going to let God pick this next job for me. And I stayed home for about 3 weeks, and people would call me. And I don't know if I was in denial like I was when I was using, but I was just home getting up, you know, glad to be sleeping, going to the spa, just acting like the only thing I didn't have was a job. And people would call me up with leads, and I'd look at them and fax things here and stuff, but I wasn't even concerned about it. I was not even concerned about it, and sure enough, this guy had called me in November and asked me to come work, and I said, well, I just got this other one, I gotta go over here, because I left that job in one day. I mean, I was doing things I had not ever done before. You know, of course, you have a sponsor, and she was all on my case. You didn't even give 2 weeks' notice. No, I didn't give 2 weeks' notice. I was miserable. You're not in my position. You know, I was justifying it like we do. But I felt bad about it. And when I got this other one, I got laid off. I was off for 3 weeks. And the gentleman that called me in November, I had called him when I got my 2 week notice. And it took a month for us to get it together. And I said, well, you know what? I think that's the job God wants me to have. And I had gone on this other interview. And they had called me back for a second interview. And I was like, well, I need a job. And I was sharing it. I said, yeah, you need a job. You need a job. But I don't want this job. It's not the job God wants me to have. I don't want this job. When I came home, she said, well, pray for God's will. And I was like, okay, God, if this is your will for me. Yeah, you know, that wasn't sincere. When I left that job and I came home, I said, I don't want this job. I need a job. You know, I got a 15-year-old son to take care of. I got mortgage to pay. I just don't want this job. When I came home, the gentleman had called me about the other job. And granted, I've been off 3 weeks. He's telling me I got to be there on Friday. And then I'm like, I gotta be there on Friday. Why can't I have at least 3-4 more days? You know how we get. And I was like, you better take this job and be grateful, girl, because this is the one you wanted, you know. And it has been the best experience of my life. I've been there a month, and I love it. My boss and I are born on the same day. We get along so great. I don't think I've had a job like this in 10 years. You know, I've had nothing like this that I absolutely enjoy. And it's only because of the program. Because I sat still. Because they offered me the other job and I came back. And I was like, no, I don't want it. And they called back with more money. And, of course, my greed kicked in. And I was like, no. No, 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 no. That's Satan. You know, I've done that too many times. I'm not going to do that today. And I obviously did pray about it. You know, my sponsor told me when I first came in, because, you know, you forget. You know, I asked her about making decisions, and she said, just go with your gut. My gut told me to go with the job I wanted. Even though I didn't want to start when they wanted me to start, you know, I also knew that I was about to panic. I mean, some fear was kicking in every 2 or 3 days, and I kept saying, nope, I'm going to learn how to do God's will. You know, I just kept saying to myself, I got to learn how to practice the principles of these programs the way y'all told me that I had to do when I came in here, and I had to stop running, you know. And I finally learned that it's going to be in His time, it's going to be His way. You know, and I was thinking right before I shared, you know, the thing is, too, I've been hearing a lot in this program that He woke me up today. So that's the first thing I got to be grateful about. Every day I was home, He woke me up to look for a job. You know, because the other alternative I ain't trying to deal with right now, because I had an aunt die last week. And I said, told my aunt, the other aunt on Sunday, we had to go see her. I hadn't been seeing her, had been to see her, and she was down to 117 pounds. And she was not eating, and I was like, did she literally starve herself to death? I mean, somebody who was put in a home who had taken care of herself all her life, and now she could not take care of herself, was willing to starve herself and die rather than, you know, live. And I was like, well, you know, I guess that's the alternative for her, but I'm not willing to die today. I mean, there was some days, and, you know, I have to go back and say the reason I came into recovery is because my mother died. In July of 93, I had already started, you know, trying to do meetings, but I hadn't surrendered. And it wasn't until November that I tried to surrender again. And like I said, I got my 3 weeks and Christmas came around. And I was like, I didn't know how to, you know, have Christmas and New Year's without doing something. So I was like, well, I'll come back into recovery after the New Year. And that last run was really, really miserable. I mean, it was miserable. And I don't share about this too often. I actually was kind of tired because my niece has taken my car, and she had left me her car that the steering wheel was like this, and I kept coming back, and you know how we do. I didn't want her to know I was using. So I kept trying to put her car back into the same spot, and she didn't have power steering. And by the third run, I was so tired of trying to put that thing back in the same spot. I was just wore out and couldn't go back anymore. Then I had taken all the beer cans and things I was drinking and put it in the hamper because I didn't want, you know. And I just sat there at 4:30 in the morning and felt real stupid. You know, I was just tired of feeling real stupid. I couldn't even go put stuff in my own trash can. You know, couldn't find my utensils, and it was strange. I was sharing about this 2 weeks ago when I had 3 months clean. I was cleaning up, and the stuff that I used to get high with, you know, you make it out of a little aspirin funnel. I had gone through all that before she went out, could not find it. Found it when I had 3.5 months clean. And I kept saying, I know I put my hand up there. And, you know, then my next door neighbor came over, and what I did use, she got all freaked out and lost that. So it was just like, this just ain't meant for me to get high no more. And that's the way I looked at it. And finally, January 16, 1994, I thought, that's it. I just can't do this anymore, you know. I also had a man in my life that I was trying to keep. He's still a good friend. But, you know, today I don't have a man in my life. And, you know, I know my sponsor kept telling me that I needed to sit with self and work on self. And I didn't know how to be without a man for 20 years. But I remember 9 months into this relationship, my sponsor and I went out to eat. And I was looking at how happy she was and peaceful and serene. And she didn't have a man. Here I was, miserable. And I thought, again, something got to go. Fortunately, you know, like I said, I had 9 months and I could get rid of the drugs, and then I could get rid of the relationship. and finally began to work on me, because I was just really, really insecure. My self-esteem was like zero. It was just down there. And today, self-esteem ain't at 100%, but it ain't at zero no more. You know, come in here, and I got out of the relationship, and like I said, it's going on 3 years, and I'm okay with me. You know, sitting still is not always easy, but I've had some growth in that area too. And for me, and I'm going to say this and get ready to shut up, like I said, the 4 years that I've been here, I've been able to grow, and that's how I've been able to stay here. Because I know for me, if I couldn't grow in this program, I'd have been gone. I would have been gone. I wouldn't have lasted even those 6 months. You know, I lied to y'all. I lied to myself. I said I was going to stay here 6 months because I wasn't as bad as y'all. I still had a car. I still had a job. But I was classified as, excuse my language, the bitch, because my behavior was terrible. I didn't really know how bad I was until I came here and started working the program and started working on me. And I was like, I ain't the nicest person in the world. You know, I say, oh, I'm so nice. How can he do this to me? I was not the nicest person in the world when I got here. You know what I'm saying? I had to do a lot of work, and I got a lot of work to do. Like I said, I'm real crazy because I want this thing to really turn out to be okay. And my sponsor's been telling me since, whew, January, Linda's going to turn out the way it's supposed to turn out. And I said, well, I don't want God to make it turn out bad. You know what I'm saying? You know, and he says, you ain't going to make it turn out bad. It's gonna... To me, if it don't turn out the way I really want it to turn out, then that's turning out bad. But actually, when I talked to this friend of mine, I was like, you know, I called so-and-so, and he ain't called me back, and it took so long, and this is that and the other. And he's like, Linda, it's going to be okay. And he's right. It's going to be okay. You know what I'm saying? I didn't get here to 10 minutes to 1. I was real crazy, and I was dragging my girlfriend in, and she was like, chill out, you know? But that's just the way I am. When I get into something, I get real hyper. I'm learning how to not get so hyper. Working the steps of this program is helping me with all that, but as I said before, I've learned how to do everything I've done one day at a time. And with that, I'll keep coming back. Thanks for letting me share that.
Thank you.
I would like to thank Linda for sharing again. My name is Jackie, and I'm an addict.
Hi,
and our second speaker, I'll give you Jeff.
Hi, family. My name is Jeffrey, and I'm an addict. Okay. And I want to thank Linda for that message. Let's give her another round. Thank you very much. And if you don't mind, I'd like for everybody to participate in the meeting. So if you could turn to your left and to your right and hug the person next to you and tell them thank God for you. And I kind of do that because when I was early into the program, this gentleman walked up to me, and he hugged me, and his name is Bob, a friend of mine, and he told me, thank God for you. And for the life of me, I couldn't figure out what he's thanking God for me for. You know, my self-esteem was so low. And after being here for a while and continuing to come back, I realized that without you, there would be no me, you know. And so I'm only here through the grace of God and helping you people. And I know that today, you know. When I came to the program and the workshop, the topic is living the program. So I'm not going to go into a long drug law because I didn't start living the program until after I stopped using. But I do want to just say that I did use for 25 years of my life. And for a long time, I didn't want to live like that. I wanted to stop. And I did stop a lot, but I didn't know how to stay stopped. I started off using heroin. And heroin, you could catch a habit, and you would get physically ill, you know. And so you guys, I say, you know, because I didn't want that habit. I said, what is it I need to do? They tell me, you need to kick. So I said, well, how do you kick? They say, don't use for 3 days. And so I would go in the house and I would stay in the house and I wouldn't use for 3 days. And I go through all the physical symptoms, you know. Hot cold chills, the bathroom, you know, the mental obsession, things like that. But after 4 days, I would go back out. And in my mind, I would think that I was all right. I'd be done kicked. And my problem was, you know, because I asked y'all, how did I catch a habit? And y'all told me I caught it because I used for 3 days in a row. So I would tell myself after the 4th day that I'm going back out and I just won't use for 3 days in a row. You know, I tried for Friday and Saturday and stop on Sunday, watch the game, you know, and then go get ready for the rest of the week on Monday. Needless to say, that never worked, you know. But for 25 years, I tried to kick. And I found out, even when I got here, though, I wasn't even clean those 3 or 4 days because I was doing all kind of other stuff. I was taking pills. I was drinking alcohol. And, you know, I was indulging myself in other substances as well. So I never actually got any kind of clean time before I came to the program with Narcotics Anonymous. I even went to jail and found drugs in jail, you know. So my whole life and thinking was centered around ways and means to get more all the time. I was completely consumed in using, you know. I never wanted to stop. I always just wanted to feel better, you know. And while I was trying to feel better, I would try to figure out a way that I could incorporate using in my life. But finally, God saw fit to bring me into this blessed program. And I remember when I got here, I went to detox. I called it detox, but for real, it was a psych ward. I was there for 3 days before I realized that. So, what happened was I had hit a bottom, an emotional bottom. I was using and I was selling drugs. And I was selling drugs for these kids, 18, 19 years old. And when I was coming up, 4 was good as 5. You know, if you was playing crap, you could put $4 down. If the bet was 5, get your bet on, you know. And so I couldn't ever catch up with the way things was going today. And so I would owe these guys $200, and they would, you know, I would give them $198, you know, $195. You know what I mean? And in my heart, I felt that I was doing a good thing, you know. Sure. Because I really didn't used to pay nobody, you know. But anyway, these guys, they was taking it real personal. And it meant a lot to them for them to get all their money. So they came to me and told me this story. And for namesake, you know, I just say, Killer Joe, I ain't killed nobody yet. And I'm going to kill somebody real soon. So all 3 of those guys came up to me and they told me this story. And they told me the story. The story was that they say, tell them what happened to Mojo Smith up on 23rd Street. So they say, Mojo Smith got killed today. So they say, tell them why he got killed. Say, because he kept giving this man short money. Say, tell them how short he was the day he died. He was $2 short. Now, I ain't no rocket scientist. But I was able to figure out that they told me that story for a reason. So, but even with the threat of death, I couldn't manage to pay them guys all their money, you know. And so I came up short. And what happened was $15. I came up with this great idea that I'll go home and I'll rob my own house. That's what I found out I did after I got here. I thought I was just pawning my daughter's television set. But anyway, I took that television set and I pawned it and got $40. By the time I got finished, I was only $5 short. Good addict that I was, you know. But anyway, at that time, The guy kind of had developed some trust in me. And I was short, and I told him that, look, why don't you just hit me with half, and I give you half the money because it's getting late, and I hit you with everything in the morning, you know, because you ain't going to be here. And he did that. So, you know, while he was in a good mood, I said, well, shucks, because split was 60-40. So as he was walking away, I said, listen, man, I said, you know what, we might as well go 50-50, you know. Since you're in a good mood. So he told me, say, it don't make no difference how much I pay you, you're still going to come up short. I said, why you say that? He said, because you want it. And he walked away from me. And I got to thinking about that. And then all the lies. My wife had put me out for stealing my daughter's television set. So literally I was in the street. But I had a pocket full of money. And I had everything I needed. I was standing by a store that I could, you know. And I started crying real profusely. And what happened was I called my wife and she took me over to the psych ward, D.C. General. And that's where I began to get the message of recovery at. While I was in that psych ward, after about 3 or 4 days, people was bringing the message in. And one of the first things I heard was that I ain't had to use no more if I didn't want to. And then I heard I ain't had to use no more even if I did want to. I had never heard that. And all my using, when I asked y'all, how could I get out of this dilemma that I was in, nobody never told me that. They told me while I was in detox that it was only a feeling, and feeling's not a fact, that it would pass if I didn't act on it. And sure enough, it does work. Because after I got out of that treatment center, because I went to another 30-day program after that, after I got out of that treatment center, I was faced with a lot of feelings that I had never dealt with before clean in my life. You know, how when you get real, real angry, and you get so angry, and you get to that point where it's like, F, you know. I'm going out and do my thing. So I got to that point and I was headed out and I was out. And some said, Jeff, you ain't got to get high no more even if you want to. And so in my mind, I said, what? So then, you know, they say, don't quit 5 minutes before the miracle. I said, I'm going to try this shit. Bad as I want to use, I ain't going to use, and I'm going to see what happens. And I went home, and sure enough, I woke up the next morning clean. I said, oh, shit. I got something here. And that's when I began to start living the program. I wasn't quite sure what to expect, what life without drugs was going to be. But I knew I wanted something different for myself. And y'all told me that I could get it. Y'all told me I didn't have to live like I was living no more ever again in my life if I didn't want to. And I truly didn't want to. So the first three principles that I got in touch with was honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. And mind you, these words were not part of my vocabulary before I came to Narcotics Anonymous. And, you know, I went all the way with the honesty thing. You know, I was so honest that I'd be honest with your money as well as mine, you know. And by that, you know, my wife was taking me out to dinner one day, and we got 2 extra pieces of cake, and they didn't charge them for us. And I told them, you know, I say, they ain't charge you for that cake right there, miss. You ain't charge us for that cake, you know. And she say, my wife called me an honest John ass dude. You know? Work your program with your money. You know? Not with mine, you know. But anyway, I was real enthusiastic about this new way of life, you know, and I wanted to be different than what I was. Because I realized that my best thinking is what got me here. I believe that. And, you know, as smart as I thought I was, because I was very smart, I thought, you know, everybody was a damn fool but me. And so, but after I got here, I came to grips with the fact that it was my best thinking that got me here. And I accepted that, and I realized that I needed some help. So I wanted to change. I wanted to change everything about me. I wanted to not respond like I used to respond to certain situations, you know. And first step talks about that. We must completely change our old way of thinking or go back to using. So I became willing. And my mind was definitely open to this new way of life because I wasn't used to it. And when I got here, people was celebrating things like 90 days, 6 months, 1 year. Could Google move. Somebody had 5 years. Lord have mercy. Like, Lynn, I couldn't believe that you could live that long without doing something, you know. And so you were definitely a power greater than myself. So, and I remember how I began to apply and live these principles in my life. The third step, one situation happened to me where I went to this gas station. I had a hoopty. Well, actually, it was just a hoop. It was so old. But anyway, I had this hoopty, and I went to the gas station, and all I had was $10 in my pocket. And in my mind, because like I say, I'm so smart, I always know what I need to do for me. I always know what's good for me, you know, and that's the way I've always lived. I'm self-reliant. I found that out in my fourth step. But anyway, in my mind, I told myself that if I just had another $10 to go along with the 10 I already had, because I wanted some ice cream, you know, I wanted some sodas to go with the ice cream, maybe a cupcake or two, and I wanted to keep $2 in my pocket so I wouldn't have to ask my wife for no money. So anyway, I went to the window, and I paid for the $10 worth of gas. The woman gave me $10 change. I looked around. I mashed that 10 off in my pocket. I said, oh, shit. I got just what I need. You know, I'm a lucky dude. And mind you, I just told myself that that's all I need to make my life all right. And I pumped the gas, and I got in my car, and I proceeded to leave. Then you people showed up in my head. And you started saying things like, where's your faith at? You know, to thine own self be true. You know, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. You know, since when did you know what was good for you? Then I asked myself now, hopefully if my higher power, who I choose to call Jesus Christ, and you don't have to do that, because you're perfectly free to pick a higher power of your own. You don't even have to name it. So let's don't get stuck there. But for me, my higher power was Jesus Christ, and I asked myself, I said, what would Jesus do? I had to turn back around then. You know, there was no question what he would have done, you know. So I turned back around and I went to the lady and I had to convince her that she had made a mistake. Gave her that $10 back. And for a minute I felt foolish. Because this was totally new for me. I had never in my life done nothing like this before. And, you know, I started driving off saying, man, and that didn't turn into a real sucker. Well, Lord have mercy, what's going to become of you now? And so I felt real bad for a few minutes. And what happened was I proceeded and went to the meeting, and people started asking me for rides, and I gave them rides. And at the end of the day, I had the ice cream, I had the cake, I had the few dollars in my pocket, and I had done the right thing. You know, God had provided for me all the needs and wants that I thought I had, and I got by that day. So as a result of me doing the right thing, I was able to begin to practice the third step in my life, which means to me just doing the next right thing, even though I don't know what the outcome is going to be. And that's what I did. And so I began to practice this in my life. And then what happened was I have a sponsor who was very encouraging with the steps, so I got involved, and I was eager to get busy with the steps. And so I went to him, and I told him, I said, listen, his name is Money. I said, Money, I'm ready to get busy with the steps. So I said, okay, all right, I think it's about time for you. He said, I want you to go home. Now, this was after I had about over a year clean, a little over a year. He said, I want you to go home and write on the first step. In my mind, I'm like, first step? This dude got to be kidding. You know I'm talking about the fourth step.
There's a red Isuzu pickup truck, license number 62B931, that's parked in an incorrect zone.
And so, in my mind, I said that because I ain't have enough heart to tell him to his face, you know.
Red Isuzu pickup truck, 62B931, you have your lights on.
Yeah, I didn't have enough heart to tell him to his face because I needed his help and I didn't want him to quit me. So anyway, I went home and I took the suggestion and I wrote on the first step. Actually, I wrote on the first three steps. And I know now that the reason for that was so that I would have, because the first three steps are the foundation of the program. And in order for me to go on with the rest of the program, it's necessary for that foundation to be strong and solid. Because any building or edifice that's built on a weak foundation is not going to last too long. And so we were talking about my life here. And so after my sponsor and I made sure that I had an understanding of the first three steps, I went on to the fourth step. Now, mind you, by this time I was praying. And not only at the traditional times, which is in the morning when I get up and at night when I go to bed, but I was praying during the day at certain points. And a lot of my prayers were just thanking. I was so glad not to be living like I was living that I'd wake up and just say thank you. You know, because a lot of mornings I didn't want to get up out of bed. A lot of mornings I knew the night before I went to bed that tomorrow's going to be rough. You know, and I go to bed thinking and knowing that tomorrow's going to be rough. And so when it would come, I would be like, oh, man, another day, you know. And so what happened was when I got involved in this fourth step and I was praying on a regular basis, when I got to those periods that were like she was talking about with her second grade teacher, when I got to those periods, those gory details that I had put away, stuffed them deep down, you know, and had no cause to relive them or bring them back up, when I got to those periods, then I realized when they were saying that many of us pass over this step, talking about the second step, with a minimum of concern, only to have to return. And so that's when I would pray, you know. And there were things that went on in my life, and I'm just going to share one of them with you, because I shared it with my sponsor. And as a result of me doing my fifth step, I'm able to share anything, any part of my life with you if I think that it's going to help. You know, and so one of the things that I was concerned with was I hated my father. Well, he was my stepfather, and I hated him. And so I never really allowed him to be the man in his house. I didn't know that till after I'd done some step work. And one reason why I hated him was I came home from school. I was in elementary school, and I saw him and my mother kissing in the middle of the floor. And I was like, I ran right by him like I didn't see it. So now I had watched enough TV to know something wasn't right about that picture because my father was at work. So in my mind, I immediately put him in a box that he wasn't no good. Dirty cotton picker, you know, low down, dirty dog. And I refused to think about what my mother might have been. But anyway, I kind of stuffed that. And what happened was they eventually got together against my wishes. Just show you how much I know, they stayed together 33 years after that. Thank God they didn't listen to me. But anyway, I hated them, and I kept reliving that. I kept reliving that. And so, like I said, I never allowed him to be the man in his house. And he would tell me come in at 2 o'clock, and I would come in at 4. He would lock the door to keep me from coming in, and I'd come in through the window, you know. And he would say certain things to me, and I would say certain things back to him. And what happened, I came home one day, and my bed was in the Dipsy Dumpster. Dipsy Dumpster's a real big trash can. And my bed was in it. I walked by and said, God damn. I said, it looked like my bed. And I looked, I said, man, I know that ain't my bed. And I look, and sure enough, it was. Now, I'm an only child. So in my mind, this dude had done a terrible disservice to me. How could you do that, you know? And, but like I say, after I did some work on myself, I realized that I played as much a part in that as anybody did, you know, because I wouldn't allow him to be the man of his house, and I probably would have done the same just a lot sooner. You know. So anyway, though, when I shared that with my sponsor, and he didn't raise his eyebrows and other things like that, other gooey, detestable things that I had done in my life, and his eyebrows didn't raise up, and he didn't say, "Ooh, wee, Jeff, good, Google Moo, you did that." When he didn't say, "My God, Jeff, you did that," you know. And when I did share those things, he eventually shared himself back with me. It made it a little easier for me to go on. And what happened was he wiped away the uniqueness of my life. You know, all my life I thought I was different. I thought I was unique. I thought nobody could have possibly experienced the things that I did in my life. Nobody was as bad as me. Nobody. But I found out after coming, continuing to come around, sharing with my sponsor, listening to you people share, that we are more alike than different. And I began to believe that. So my sponsor kind of, an inventory, I'm a businessman, I'm self-employed, I work for myself. And he told me that any business that doesn't take an inventory is bound to fail. And an inventory is taken so that we'll know what we need to keep and what we need to get rid of. Do an inventory. And so I also asked him, I said, "Well, listen, me and you, we've been kicking it for a little while, you know, and I've been sharing with you quite honestly. I say, why do I have to write it? You know, why don't we just go to the park somewhere and sit down and kick it, you know?" So he told me that the reason why we write it is so that when we go over it, that it'll be there in black and white, in my own words, in my own writing, and it would be impossible for me to deny it. Because we have selective memory, you know. I want to say something today, but come time for me to share it with somebody else, I might switch it up, according on how you're looking. So me writing it down eliminated me being able to do that. And I found out some things about myself. One was that I was self-reliant. Another one was that I had fear, you know. I needed to be validated by other human beings, you know. All my life, for a great part of my life, all I wanted my mother and my stepfather to say to me was, "Jeff, I love you, and you're a hell of a son. I am so proud of you," you know. All my life, I just wanted my mother to say something to that effect. And when I got married, I waited for my wife to tell me that, you know. Needless to say, it never happened until I came into the program of Narcotics Anonymous. But I found out that I needed validation, you know. And I lived my life like that. And it just didn't stop with them. It would go to my friends. You know, I needed my friends to tell me, "You're a hell of a guy." That's why I fought so much, you know. That's why I did the things that I did, because I wanted to fit in, you know. I wanted to be a people pleaser, you know. I was a people pleaser. And so I found these things out when I shared this with my sponsor. But he didn't just leave me with courage and defects. He also told me I had some assets. And self-reliance was also on that side. He also told me that I was trusting, you know, that I was forgiving, that I was God-fearing and also had a God-conscious, that principles that I picked up in the first three steps, honest, I was open-minded, and I was willing, you know. So when I left there, I had a list of assets and liabilities. And those things that I needed to work on really subsided themselves, the ones that was on the paper. But by me being so open, other character defects were surfaced. And one of those were anger. Like I said, I'm a businessman, I'm self-employed, and this guy had brought me back some merchandise that wasn't mine, and he wanted me to exchange it. And so another guy who was down on the corner with him had approached me first and said, "Jeff, main man down there talking about he gonna bring you this merchandise back, and it ain't yours, and you gonna take it from him." I said, "Well, yeah, he said that." He said, "Yeah." And I said, "Okay, so now in my mind, I'm baking him a cake, right? And plus, I know everybody there and they know what's going on. So when the dude finally did come and approach me with it and he gave it to me, I looked at it, I checked it, I said, man, this is not mine. So he said, yes, it is. I bought it from you. He got loud and indignant. I said, man, I know it ain't mine. You know, so he said, okay, wait right here. I'll be right back. And he left. Now, that was the point when I was supposed to switch up or leave. But anyway, that was when my character defects jumped out. Bam! They jumped me, right? They go ego, pride, fear, self-centeredness, everything. It's like, man, them people down there on that corner, they know what's happening. If you give them this money back, they're going to thank you a chunk. And so, and if you leave, they're going to know you're a sucker. So now here I am. I'm waiting on this dude to come back, and I don't have enough. But I got some buddies with me, some NA buddies that's there with me. And he came back. So when he came back, I'm still, now I'm trying to finesse him to get in the truck with me and take him around the corner, because I done gained a few pounds. This dude was kind of skinny. I felt like I could take him, right? So I try to get him in the truck. You know, come on, I know where we can go check it out at, you know. And so he wouldn't get in. So anyway, while he was gone, I had enough program in me to pray. And I prayed and asked God to help me with this particular situation because I really don't know what to do. And so while he was gone and he returned, I was prepared to die. If it had came to that, you know, I was prepared to go all the way, like I heard Linda shit. And when he came back, my friend gave him the money. And when he left, you know, I thank God, because God had done for me what I couldn't do for myself, you know. And now 5 minutes later, here come another person with the exact same scenario. And I had an opportunity to do something different. And that's how God works for me. Those things that I need to work on, those issues that are up in my life, like at that particular time, it was anger. It was self-centeredness. And I asked God to help me with that. So when the next person came and I looked at it in my mind, I said, this is not mine. I looked at the person. I asked him, I said, what do you want me to do? Do you want another one or do you want your money back? That was new for me, you know. But as a result of me doing that, I felt a lot better, you know. I felt much better. I didn't go through the anger. I didn't go through the pain. I didn't go through the shame or the guilt. And I really didn't care what you people thought about me. And that's how the 6 and 7 step kind of worked for me. When things are bothering me and I'm cornered and I ask God for help, what he will do is he will give me another opportunity to do something different. The 6th step is talking about change. And change means that I have to do something different. If I keep doing what I've been doing, I'm going to keep getting what I've been getting. So I have to do something different. And that's how it works for me. And I got to be willing to pray. I got to be willing to ask God for some help. Because me alone, I can't do nothing. I cannot change myself. And so as a result of me practicing praying and going to God, not only with the big things, but the little things as well, the things that I think I can handle. For instance, I think I can handle having a conversation with somebody. But today I pray before I start talking to you. I have people that I sponsor that will call me. And before I answer anything or say something to them, I pray. Today, before I came up here to this meeting, I prayed. I actually prayed this morning when I got out of bed. And I asked God to help me and to move me aside and use me as a vessel to get his message across so that somebody in this room will know that they don't ever have to use drugs no more if they don't want to. And that they don't ever have to use drugs no more even if they do want to. And so when I came around that corner not very long ago, and I began to pray again, and I told God, I say, God, I know I prayed this morning and I know you heard me, but I'm praying this time so I can feel better. And I know he understood that. See, because this is a God of my understanding. And so the steps after that, 8 and 9, were where I began to take responsibility for the things that I'd done during my addiction, you know. And the benefit that came from that was that I was able to hold my head up and face people that I wasn't able to face before I got to that point in my recovery. And give you an example was, there would be family events that would go on. And I wouldn't go to those family functions because I didn't want to see my Aunt Mary Lou or my Aunt Lynn, because I didn't want them to bring up the fact that I had borrowed that money from them and never paid them back, you know. Or the fact that I had took some out of somebody else's house in the family, you know. And so that shame, guilt, and degradation wouldn't allow me to associate with them people because I didn't want to take responsibility for my actions. And so I put these people down on the list, and I became willing to make amends to them. And that's what I did. After making amends, now, my father, whom I hated, I ended up having to put him on my list. And I made amends to him, and he died shortly after that. And I was blessed. I feel blessed to have done that. And I don't have that hanging on to me now. But anyway, the benefit from making amends is something that you're going to have to experience for yourself, but it's real, real great. 10, 11, and 12 are the maintenance steps. If I have an automobile and I don't maintain it, if I don't do the maintenance on that automobile, it's going to break down. It's not going to serve me well. So that's how my life is. When those character defects, the 10th step is for me to keep those character defects in check, or to keep my life in check, so that when they resurface, while I'm sitting down and I'm taking a look at who I am, myself, and what I've done today, not only the bad things, but a lot of days I do a lot of good things. And when I sit down and I see that anger, fear, guilt, shame is rearing their ugly head, I'm able to go to God with it and put them back where they belong, put them in their proper perspective, because they're God-given characteristics. Meditation is something that I practice. I practice all the steps. I'm not perfect. I don't have a perfect program. And a lot of times I feel short. I fall short. But what I do is I get back up, I dust myself off, and I continue trying. That's all the book say I need to do, is try my best. When I try my best, it works for me just like it has worked for countless others. And so I sit down in the morning and I pray. And then I go and I kind of do 10 and 11 together. And I sit down and I cut everything off that's around me. And I sit in silence, and I started off with just 2 minutes. And it was very hard for me because my mind, I would start off asking God what he want me to do today. And I would end up thinking about something that somebody had done to me the day before. Dirty dog, he shouldn't have never done that. And then once I realized that I'm no longer where I want to be with God, I would ask God, you know, to help me to stay focused. Please clear away the channel so that we can communicate with each other. And the 2 minutes eventually turned into 5. The 2 minutes eventually turned into 5. And then they turned into 15. Today I'm able to sit there and I have to get up, you know. And when I do drift off and get away from God, I just ask him to help me to stay focused. And the thing is that I put up a deliberate effort to develop a conscious contact with the God of my understanding. And I hear people saying that I'm not there yet, which is okay. But I know for me, I'm the type of guy, type of addict, that if I keep saying I'm not there yet, I will never get there because I won't try. So the book says, once again, that if I try my best, it'll work for me like it has worked for countless others. So I sit there and I deliberately put up some effort to get with the God of my understanding. As far as the 12th step, I try to practice these principles in all my affairs, which if I practice them, the more I practice them, the easier it is, you know. There are situations like I'm married, and this is my wife right here. We've been married 25 years. Yeah. Recovery has been real, real good to me. I'm living a lot better than I've ever lived before in my life. all the dreams that I had made while I was using, I reached them, you know, and now I have gotten new dreams and new goals. And I know that with the help of God and the help of you people, that I can accomplish them. The program works, you know, if you work it, you know, and my suggestion is give yourself a chance. I'm in service. I've been in service from the day that I came in almost, well, at least since 90 days. And it's been, my clean date is June 29th, 1993. And I'm very proud of that. It's my time, you know, and I'm in love with the person that I am today. You know, I wasn't always comfortable being in my own skin. I'm going to say this and I'm going to turn the meeting over. Today, I have attained a lot of material things. I have outfits that I could put on and be sharp as a tack and feel real good about it. But as I was coming over here, I realized that it ain't about that. You know, it ain't about how I look. It ain't about how I sound. It's about the program Narcotics Anonymous, which is much bigger than I could ever be, and the grace of God. So it wasn't necessary for me to try to dress the outside up. The only thing I needed to do coming into this room was tell my story and be as honest as I possibly could be. And God told me that it was going to work out just fine. This has been very, very good experience for me. I'm glad to be here, and I want to thank y'all for listening. Thanks for letting me share.
Okay, I would like to thank Jeffrey again for sharing. We've run out of time, and would like someone like to read just for today, and we have a beautiful way of closing. In fact, we can close with a moment of silence and then the serenity prayer. Yeah, sure. But we hug in here.
Make
it to
the I'm Angel, I'm an addict. Just for today. Tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program. I will try to follow it to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associations, people who are not using and who have found a new way of life. So long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear.
Just for today.
Okay, we're going to have to do something to connect. Hello? Okay, well, we need to get by.
Just a moment of silence. God,
grant me the strength to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can.